The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, two full rounds of J1 fixtures since our last episode and, some absolutely cracking results.
Yeah, absolutely. The league kind of went one way in midweek and it shifted back another way this weekend. You can never really predict what's going on in J1. But yeah, Wednesday especially, some incredible results.
Most definitely. So, well, of course, our patrons already got the full rundown of Wednesday's match day 26 action in Sam's lightning fast match reports on all 10 games. But just to briefly summarise, the round was highlighted by Kawasaki's first loss of the season, 1-0 down in Fukuoka, and by Yokohama F. Marinos taking advantage of Yuta Higuchi's VAR-assisted sending off early in the second half to sweep aside Tosu 4-0 and close the gap at the top to just a single point heading into the weekend's match day 27. At the other end of the table, we should also give a special mention to Yokohama FC for hauling themselves out of the cellar with a 3-1 home win over Gamba Osaka. But Sam, probably the standout result was a Shonan absolutely belting Cerezo Osaka 5-1 away. Now, what on earth got into Belmari on Wednesday night? Had they been threatening a performance like this? Did they just strike lightning in a bottle on one magical night? Or were Cerezo just abhorrent? I imagine a combination of all three.
Yeah, probably. I think it was lightning in a bottle for sure for Shonan because, yeah, they've been competitive in most games they've played, but they've never threatened to blow a team away. And I think they came up against the right opponent in Cerezo who'd been on a really poor run of form. And, yeah, I think it all was summed up by the first goal as Kim Jin-hyun caught across and then fell over his own goal line. And from then on, Shonan just, yeah, they were clinical in front of goal. It wasn't like they completely battered Cerezo even for the entire game, but they just took their chances, and yeah, Cerezo had no real answer for them. It was an incredible performance from Shonan.
All right, well, as we'll come on to, over the weekend, Shonan didn't build on their midweek win, and Cerezo bounced back from that humiliating loss, and we'll cover all of that in our full review of Match Day 27. And before we welcome in our guest, I should also mention we might be hearing from the newest member of the J-Talk family at some point of this episode. We picked up our new puppy last Friday afternoon. She's a 2-month-old whippet named Lily, and already FC Tokyo's number one fan and maybe good luck charm. She was very excited when Leandro spanked in that tremendous winner inside the last 10 minutes on Saturday night. So I'm sure once we get around to reviewing that game, Lily might be piping up with her opinions on that performance. But yes, just to give you a little bit of warning, listeners, if there's any barking going on, that's Lily and not me. Okay, and with that said, it's time to welcome in our guest, our regular Frontale correspondent, Neil Debnam, is back on the pod. Neil, we wanted to give you some time to process your feelings after the double departure of Al Tanaka and Kaoru Mitoma during the Olympic break. And also, while you're on a winless run, it must have felt very, very unfamiliar to you. We wanted to keep our distance, but now with the ship steadied, perhaps after Saturday's away win over Sapporo, yeah, I thought it was a great time to have you back on. So welcome back to the podcast, and how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, thanks for sparing my embarrassment or my shame or my, I don't know, my disappointment. Well, thanks for sparing everyone from my negativity. So I've still got a fair bit of negativity in me, so hopefully negativity lovers will be in for a treat. But thanks for inviting me back.
Not at all, anytime, mate. You know, it's always a pleasure. We love to hear from you. So three games without a win, that must have, as I said, felt a very unfamiliar. I was just curious, the last time you'd gone three games without a win in the league, and I did have to do a little bit of digging and go back a couple of years. I don't know if you remember the dark days of August 2019, Neil, when you went a whole month without winning a league game, but that was indeed the last time you'd gone that length of games without a win. In fact, there were six in a row, which these days is frankly unfathomable. But what did you feel was behind the not sure whether we should call it a slump or not in last week's episode? I mean, most clubs obviously go through stretches like these, but it's unfamiliar territory for your side. So what were the broader issues you felt were behind your side's inability to break down some stern defences over the last few weeks?
Well, I guess that's the million-dollar question. And certainly for a while, I don't think any fans or manager knew the answer to that question. And I'm not sure we know it now, to be honest. But I don't know, it kind of felt like after the ACL, everything fell to pieces somehow. Because we went to the Emperor's Cup game away at Jeff, and oh my God, that was awful. Terrible, terrible game that we were lucky to get through on penalties after being lucky to get through on penalties against Nagano in the previous round. And then Oshima got injured there. So we had a little break, but I don't think the break particularly did us any good. And I know around the stage of the Jeff game, we were apparently not, well, I say we, including myself in the team and the playing staff there for some reason, but they were not at home because of the quarantine. So basically they came back from, where was it, Uzbekistan. Was it Uzbekistan? Yeah, I think it was Uzbekistan.
That's right, yeah.
And basically didn't return to their homes for, I think it was two or 3 weeks. So basically they were living in a hotel, I don't know, hotel or at the training ground, and travelling around to various games for one uninspiring performance after another. What went wrong? I don't know. I think the last few games, what's gone wrong is losing one important player to injury every game. Of course, Tanaka Mitoma leaving was a huge blow. But it's not like it was unexpected. I think everybody knew it was going to happen. It's weird. It's like Mitoma and Tanaka going seems to have punctured our confidence balloon. So it's not like we were playing okay and just being unlucky. We were playing really badly. And to be honest, that's continued up to the Consadola game, I think, where we really did a bit of a smash and grab on them. So I feel sorry for them. But at the same time, I'm delighted that we've managed to at least reverse the results slump, if not the performance slump.
You mentioned there that everyone kind of knew that Tanaka and Mitoma were going to leave. Do you think the squad was prepared enough for that eventuality? And do you think you did enough in the transfer window to replace those players? Yeah, how do you think the club stands at the moment?
Mentally prepared, probably. But from a playing point of view, absolutely not. I think we got one player in the transfer window. And I think in the blog post before we announced his signing, and who knows when he'll turn up, that's a kind of a mystery. But in the blog post I wrote before, I said we really need reinforcements because I think we were starting to wobble a little bit there. I can't remember when that was, but maybe Oita away, we were pretty lucky, I thought, to win that game. And I can't remember if the signing was before or after then. But yeah, I said we need sort of some numbers or some options. And what we don't need is foreign players coming from overseas who have to go through quarantine. We need someone sort of just grab someone from another J-League team who's not playing. And I thought maybe like Fujimoto from Kobe would have been a good option, like a striker who just gives us something else who hasn't been playing and would be willing to sort of go somewhere to get some games. But maybe that wasn't an option due to Kobe, but maybe they didn't want to loan him to us, but maybe it was never considered. But I thought the sensible thing would be to get a few numbers, because even though we had cover, it's like a lot of this cover has been pretty ordinary this year. I don't want to single players out, but apparently I'm going to. But Hasegawa has, since he got injured at the start of last year, we haven't really seen anything from him apart from like occasional 30-second flashes. But he's been pretty ordinary, and I really want him to do well because I really like him. And sort of the same from Chinen as well, who I guess came back from loan last year with maybe we didn't expect too much from him coming back, but I think he must be, I mean, my fellow Frontale Gaijin fans will laugh when I say this because some of them have a vastly different opinion, but I think Chinen's just the most unlucky player I've ever seen because he'll do all the right things and then somehow not score. And I just think that sort of these, when you get these injuries, we don't have the cover to slot in because, oh, well, we have the cover to slot it in, but these are players who are sort of desperately grasping for some kind of form. And yeah, I honestly can't understand how we got there, but I also can't understand how we're still top, to be honest. It's a miracle, but yeah, definitely not enough was done in the transfer market, but I don't know. I guess, Inoniki we trust, maybe. But we'll see. I might review that statement after the next couple of games, maybe. So, yeah, who knows?
So was there a sense on Saturday then that the first loss of the season the previous Wednesday shook some players, maybe shook some sense into some players maybe, or made some players take a bit of a reality check that they weren't just able to coast through these games, Neil? But, I mean, earlier you said you felt it was a bit of a smash and grab away up in Sapporo. So, again, you maybe not as satisfied with the performance as you know, casual observers might expect you to be after a 2-0 away win.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a return to form, that's for sure. I think my wife told me I didn't watch, funnily enough, after the Avispa game, I didn't do anything apart from write a very quick blog post and then forget about the existence of football for a while, and especially the existence of Jordi Crewe, if that's how you pronounce his name, because I had a bit of a beef with him. And, you know, just not a real beef, just a grudge, I guess.
Leandro level, so, or not quite at that level?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I normally say I don't understand the rules of football. So, I mean, I'm the perfect person to come on here and comment about these things. But honestly, he should have been sent off, shouldn't he? I thought, like, if not for the second challenge where he got the yellow card, the fact that he'd done the same thing twice in a row. I mean, it looked, yeah, shut up, Neil. Okay, forget this. not Leandro level yet, but put it this way. When he finally gets his red card, I will raise a glass to myself. But yeah, now I've forgotten what the question was. Sorry. Was it? Oh yeah. After the Avispa game, apparently my wife told me that Oniki was taking full responsibility for the defeat, which I thought that was maybe quite good of him, really, because I mean, of course, it's partly his responsibility because he picks the team and he chooses the tactics. Or he chose the tactics once, and we just repeat it every time. But there's a lot of players who aren't playing well for whatever reason. Ian Ugg has been very patchy since he got his haircut. So I think there's definitely some kind of Samson type thing going on with him. And yeah, it's just like a lot of big names are not really doing anything. And then, I mean, I'm really reluctant to get back onto my Oniki bashing bandwagon, but his insistence on always trying to play Taniguchi in midfield, I mean, I think it's worked like once in 100 times for about 5 minutes. And then the reason he's injured now, and the reason our like, first or second choice centre-back is injured, Taniguchi now, is because Oniki played him in midfield in a cup game against Shimizu when he could have played any number of other midfielders there. And it's just, yeah, it's just slightly frustrating sometimes, but at times, but I feel like maybe the Oniki's feeling the same thing, that it's just like, what's happened? I don't really know what to do. Maybe we keep trying to do the same thing and hopefully it'll shake us out of it. So I think a Avispa game shook us up a bit, but I think it's really crucial for us to get that win on Saturday, and maybe even the fact that we were terrible, pretty terrible, and Sapporo deserved to win, but we still won. Maybe that's actually the best sort of outcome for us mentally. It's like, well, we were really lucky here, and you know, maybe that is like the second kick up the backside, but without the points penalty of the first kick up the backside.
On that theme, were you slightly surprised or accepting of the kind of team selection where you had João Schmidt, Leandro, Damian, Andy and Agar all on the bench, that is with various injuries in the squad? Was that just, do you think, a shake-up from Onyeka saying your performances haven't been good enough in the last few weeks? Or were you a little concerned going into the game when you saw those three players on the bench?
Maybe Schmidt a little bit. I think Damião and Kobayashi, Onyeka will always like alternate between them. I think sort of irrespective of what happens, I think Kobayashi scored, was it against Senda? I think he scored a hat-trick away, and the next match Damião started. So I think that's his way, that it's like, you know, you take it in turns. If you're both fit, you take it in turns. I really like Ianaga. He's a great player, but I can't say I was disappointed to see him on the bench, because I think, yeah, without his longer hair, he's nothing at the moment. So we need to wait for that to grow back a little bit. But yeah, Schmidt was maybe a surprise, but I just think the midfield is the sort of the real mystery zone at the moment. And I don't think anyone knows what to do there. It seems like even like Wakizaka, oh God, no, I'm getting confused about the games, but Wakizaka was on the bench, wasn't he? Oh God, no, he was on the bench one game. I think it might have been Saturday, or maybe it's Hiroshima.
Yeah, he played Saturday.
Yeah, he was on the, great recall. he was on the bench against Hiroshima, and we didn't make all of our subs, I don't think, and we didn't bring him on. So he's obviously not the number one now, I don't know. Tachibanada seems to be in there all the time, which I can understand because he's all energy kind of monster, but a little bit kind of raw in the way that Al Tanaka was raw for the first season, but sort of definitely the benefits outweigh any kind of negatives with him, I think. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think the injuries, Hatate, Taniguchi, Oshima, and maybe Sukagawa, who's just completely disappeared since he got a head injury in Uzbekistan. I think certainly the first three are more important players than Sukagawa, even though I like Sukagawa's get-stuck-in ability, if that's a phrase. But like these are three players who would be starting games, and we haven't got them. And I think now, two of them are midfielders probably who would be, well, one would certainly start in midfield. Hatate probably would as well, because everybody's having a go in midfield this year, and Hatate is having a go everywhere all over the pitch as well. So I think, yeah, midfield is the area where it's just everything's a bit of a mystery. So I'm never surprised by a selection, because it's like he's got like some kind of, I don't know what this is called, but some kind of chart where you've got every possible permutation of a midfield, and he's tried all the Sukugawa ones. So now Sukugawa's out of the picture for a bit until he's tried all the other possible permutations. And then hopefully sooner or later, we'll find one that fits a bit better. But yeah, it wasn't a surprise, and sort of in the past, maybe last year and early this season, We would sort of approach a game with rotation and think, you know, maybe we're still going to be okay. But after those three results, yeah, I think he had to do something. I don't think he's the kind of manager who wants to pick a fight with Ianaga particularly, because he seems like he's quite an emotional character, Ianaga. So, yeah, I don't know, basically. a very long-winded way of saying, don't know.
yeah, fair enough. So what do you reckon, Sam? Was Sapporo the right opponent at the right time for Kawasaki? Obviously, a Misha Petrovic side is not going to dig in the way that, say, Kashiwa did a few games ago when they managed to dig out a 0-0 draw. Sapporo, especially at home, are going to try and play their football. And, I mean, they had a decent chance in the 15th minute through Ryota Aoki. That came just after Daiyatono had a shot against the post. But, when you look at the way that Kawasaki scored their two goals, and Neil's mentioned Kobayashi there, making his first start since early June, and he showed that there was plenty of life left in the old dog yet, scoring the opener in the 34th minute and then setting up Tono for the second 5 minutes later. So, I don't know, the fixture gods might have smiled on Kawasaki here. As Neil said, it wasn't their best performance, but it looks to me like it was an opportune time to head up to Sapporo.
Yeah, they can be, but also Sapporo could be a team that can take teams apart as well. I mean, they had plenty of chances, especially in the first half, and on another day they could have had three or four goals themselves, but they do allow opposition chances no matter how badly they're playing, because Sapporo will be very open at the back, and then teams will get in and they will always have one, and then Kawasaki took their chances in this game, which got them the result in the end. But so maybe from that instance, Sapporo is a nice and friendly team to play against, but on another day, I mean, Sapporo will be kicking themselves, because a bit like how they played in Nagoya, where they dominated the first half but just didn't score, that was kind of the way it was here. And I think if this game was played out maybe another 10 times, Sapporo might win 9 of them.
Right, yeah, fair enough then. All right, so Neil, obviously it would be great for you to see Kobayashi back and starting, obviously giving Damiao a bit of a breather, but then obviously you're playing such an important role in this win, and you're just going to have to wrap him in cotton wool as well, aren't you? Hopefully you'll get Taniguchi and Oshima Hatate back soon as well, but Kobayashi shapes as being a key figure in the run-in, how are you feeling about things? I mean, reinstating that four-point gap over the weekend with F. Marino's losing after they looked impregnable in the past couple of months. It's obviously going to be a slog to the finish line, and obviously that final day clash looms on the horizon, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would be lying if I said that I hadn't been keeping a close eye on their games recently. I mean, I don't want to watch them because, I like a jinx, or rather I don't like a jinx. But I don't know, I thought when was it 15 games unbeaten, Marino?
13, yeah.
13. So when they did that and everybody was saying this is amazing, 13 games unbeaten, I did feel like they're ignoring the fact that we hadn't lost in any competition since last October, maybe. So I thought, it's like, what are you talking about? You know, this is a bit, give us our credit. We've got a much longer unbeaten run. But at the same time, I was pretty worried about them. But I think one of you guys said a few weeks ago, or one of the guests said that they were having a dodgy, they looks like they've got a more tricky run coming up of games. And I was fully anticipating Sagan Tosu doing something against them. Was that Wednesday? I think that was Wednesday.
Yeah.
And they really didn't. And then we lost the same night. And it was just like, that was doom and gloom night, because it seemed like the impossible was going to happen. But, like I said, I would be lying if I said that I wasn't aware of the impossible quite clearly being quite possible. I think Kashima did us a favour. Thanks, Kashima. I think I'm sorry to the Marinos fans, but I was 100% behind Kashima on I can't even remember what day it was. Saturday, yeah. It was a long day, Saturday. One of the first times I've supported Kashima, and it's nice to get the 4 points back. It's really, really nice. And I hope that they can stumble a bit more soon. I mean, they've got Nagoya coming, which, I mean, who knows which version of Nagoya would turn up, probably the less good one. And they've got Yokohama, FC as well, which is, you know, anything can happen in a derby. And there was another game, I think another slightly tricky game they've got. So, I mean, the fact that I know who their next, well, I kind of know who their next three opponents are, suggests that I'm not particularly comfortable at the moment. Because even if they lose, or even if they draw, I'm not ruling out us losing again. Because, yeah, I don't think the ship is particularly steady yet.
All right. And yeah, so just to, I guess, to wrap things up, who are some of the key players that you're counting on as we said, to fill the void of Tanaka and Mitoma for the remainder of this season? And maybe some other players who have just started to break through. You mentioned Tachi Banada, and whether Hasegawa will be able to recapture some of his former form. We would certainly hope so. But so who are you banking on in the last couple of months, or the last 3 months or so of the season, to try and get you over the line?
I think probably in classic Oniki style, I'm banking on the first choice, first 11 being fit, basically. I think Tachi Banada is really important to us now. I think, like I said about Ian Ogre's out of form, I think he does kind of go through patches. So I'm hoping his patch of sort of mediocrity finishes soon. I think Kobayashi is going to be important if he stays fit. And I mean, there's the possibility of sort of a surprise, maybe. Like someone like Kozuka starting a few more games, because it does seem like he gets an absurd amount of chances. Because normally a player, if they don't do particularly well, sort of disappears. And Kozuka keeps hanging around. So I think Oniki likes him. Should I mention the question that you asked me?
Topic, we got a question from Graham Freche on Patreon, and he asked, is Ten Miyagi the new Mitoma? He's getting a lot of minutes lately and seems to be the favourite choice of Oniki at Mitoma's position.
I guess perhaps is my my definitive answer. I think he's getting a lot of minutes, mainly because Hasegawa's still struggling. And I think, in a way, maybe Miyagi struggles a little bit as well in the same way as Hasegawa, that he will do something pretty good and he'll dribble and he'll move up the field. But then it's always just that last sort of ball or last cross or the shot. He's not quite there yet. And I think maybe that, of course, that's the difference with Mitoma, that he would do these things and then sort of at least once or twice a game it would pay off, it would come off. So I think, I don't know, I mean, if Hasegawa and Miyagi are playing equally well, I think Oniki might move Miyagi somewhere else. But I think at the moment it's a choice of who is least out of form with those two, maybe. I mean, of course, Miyagi's young, and really young, and he's sort of up and coming player, and he'll definitely be one for the future, of course. But I think his reliance on Miyagi is more to do with lack of other options, perhaps, and especially now Hatate's injured for an unspecified amount of time. I think that rules out one other person who could play in that position. So sort of a few years ago, we had a couple of years, maybe it was last year, I don't know. We had like a ridiculous amount of a little bit, not particularly tall, left wing, dribbly, super attacking players. And now we've ended up really having to choose between two who neither of them are particularly setting the world on fire. So yeah, he's first choice there, I think, but probably due to the lack of form of Hasegawa more than anything.
All right, Dan, thanks for that, Neil. And thanks for your question, Graham Freche. Plenty more to come from him later on in the episode. Just before we let you go, Neil, obviously once the teams are back in action after the international break, you'll be heading over to South Korea for your one-legged ACL round of 16 tie against Ulsan Hyundai. So I would imagine the way you've been speaking about recent events at your club over the past couple of weeks, a month or month and a half, you're probably not all that confident about how things are going to go over there. And again, you've the rub of the green's gone against you with that tie being drawn over in South Korea when it obviously could have been at your place.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, to say the least, and especially because Ulsan, I think, were the other team who had a 100% record. So it's a shame that both of those teams have to play each other, and it's especially a bigger shame for us because we've got to go there. And I guess that would be more living out of a hotel quarantine for the players for a while. I can't say I'm confident, but I think they've lost. Ulsan lost the player. I think I saw... lost a player to transfer. So, I mean, who knows? I think the next three games we've got two Levan Cup games against Urawa and then Ulsan. So we're not going to play in the league for a while. And I don't know, I wonder, I didn't quite check the calendar, but if maybe Marinos could lose their next league game, which they will play before we play again in the league, if that were possible. I'm not asking them to do it. I don't think they will they'll respond to my request. But if they did that and it was before the Ulsan game, I think that might be the kind of morale boost that we need. But I'll probably find out that game's afterwards. But I don't know. Yeah, I think we won't play another league game for four matches. And the next three are pretty important. The next three games, I guess, if we want to sort of proceed in competitions, but yeah, it's not a good time to play knockout matches, really, is it, at the moment, with the way we're playing. But I don't know, I mean, this year's been so focused on the ACL from sort of club point of view that, you know, maybe they were trying to get a little slump in so that we could get a boost afterwards. I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think we lost. What I'm saying is we lost against Avispa on purpose so that we could get a bounce back just at the right time. Yeah, so the first Urawa game will be mini bounce, and then the second one will be bigger bounce, and time for a maxi bounce.
Very cunning plan, Neil. Very cunning. All right. Well, yeah, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see if it pans out. But yeah, some really interesting games ahead for your club, obviously. And yeah, we wish you all the best. And as we've been saying over the past few episodes, this title race is well and truly on. So we all hope that it does go down to that final day at the Nissan Stadium. I'm not sure your nerves would be able to take it, but yeah, for the rest of us, it'll be absolutely fascinating viewing. So, yeah, it was a long time between podcast appearances, but we appreciate you making the time to join us again this week. And yeah, we'll check in again as the end of the season progresses.
Thanks a lot for having me again, and yeah, thanks for not inviting me for a bonus episode on Wednesday.
All right. Our thanks again to Neil Debnam. When we come back, Sam and I will round up the rest of the J1 Match Day 27 games. Welcome back to the other games from Match Day 27 then. And obviously on Wednesday night, Yokohama F. Marinos had to close the gap to Kawasaki to just 1 point. But as we've mentioned in passing in part one, yes, their 13-game unbeaten run came to an end at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night when the F. Marinos hosted Kashima. So on the night that F. Marinos honoured Kota Mizunuma for his 300th J1 appearance, and they returned to the Nissan Stadium for the first time since the end of May. Sean Galbraith was asking in our Patreon-only line group if they could go back to playing at Mitsuzawa after Antlers raced into a 2-0 lead inside the first half hour, Sam.
Yeah, they would like to go there and have it back, because they started really poorly, and I thought Kashima were the better side, especially in that first half. And we've said all along that Kevin Muscat hasn't really changed a lot from what Postecoglou was doing, but I thought some of his team selection was a little bit off. I mean, you go against Kashima and you know that their central midfield is going to be two off, Pituka Leo Silva and Misao. So it's Pituka and Misao in this game, like one of the strongest midfields you're going to get in the league. And then he put Junamano back into midfield, and I thought they'd lost a little bit of steel there, and I thought really Kashima and Pituka especially ran that midfield. And then Elbert was also dropped and, well, rested, as I would imagine, but it's not like they've been overexerted in their wins. They played against 10 men in midweek, and Elbert came off after half an hour. So, yeah, just those little changes, it kind of lost them. Sort of the way they lost kind of consistency, I thought, and that added to Hatanaka getting injured after about half an hour, and then, yeah, the team was a little bit all over the place, I thought, and not quite as, in their usual manner. So Kashima took full advantage of that. They're a very strong team, and once they get a 2-0 lead, as they did in this game, they're very, very good defensively, and it was a rare game where Marinos didn't just have chance after chance, and, yeah, full credit to Kashima, I think.
Yes, indeed. So the first goal came in the 15th minute when a long ball forward from Yuya Oki led to a collision in the midfield and allowed Sean Madoy to run free down the right. And his dictionary definition of a pinpoint cross was headed in by Ryotaro Araki. And then after Jun Amano and Marcos Jr. shot off target for the hosts, it was 2-0. On the half hour when Diogo Pachuca, who Sam's mentioned, had an excellent game, basically dribbled 60 yards from the edge of his own box and then slipped in a just onside ISA Wader, who surged into the box and shot through Yohei Takaoka's legs with the outside of his right foot. Mizunuma came off the bench in the 58th minute and a minute later drew a decent save from Oki, but his first touch was pretty ordinary and it might have had a better chance if he was able to kill the ball stone dead. But yes, Sam, F. Marino's failed to create too many clear-cut chances the rest of the way. That wasn't, of course, until Elber's diving header went wide, right at the end of second-half stoppage time. So Stuart Woodward was worried about Antlers in last week's episode, and, of course, their previous loss before their 13-game unbeaten run, F. Marinos, was the 5-3 barn burner up in Kashima in the middle of May. So, I guess the Stuart's fears were well-founded, and Graham Freche had a question about Kashima. Does this win for them make them the most likely team to finish third now? Obviously, there's still a long way to go. We both said we fancied Kobe on last week's episode. Of course, that was after an ordinary performance from Kashima. So, yes, we might just reverse course this week after they've looked so impressive in this game and Kobe have lost to FC Tokyo. But, with the talent that they've got at their disposal, I mean, it's just about as good a lineup as Kobe are able to put out. So I guess as long as the title race is going to run, we can just hope that this battle for third goes all the way as well, with obviously Tosu still very much interested as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it will do. I mean, you look at there's four teams currently on 47. Araro very selfishly didn't win and protect themselves to 47 as well and could have had a real race. But last week I thought it was between Kashima and Kobe. I still stick with that, but neither side have really got the consistency down at the moment. Both sides can look incredible, as Kashima did maybe probably midweek against Shimizu and for the large parts of this game as well, and Kobe do the same, but they still not really have that long run of victories or long run unbeaten run. They always seem to slip up, as Vissel did this weekend. So I think because of that, it's going to be a really open race. I don't think they're going to necessarily shake off Tosu and Nagoya and Urara immediately. I think maybe they will towards the end, if I'm going to predict anything, and that'll almost certainly be wrong now. But I'd say it's those two, Kashima and Kobe, who will fight it out towards the end. But I think for a long period of time, we're going to have a really good race with up to about five, maybe even six teams chasing that third place.
Yeah, it promises to be a terrific end to the season, obviously, for so many reasons, at the top and the bottom of J1. And, Kobe obviously came in as the incumbents in the third spot in the table. But, we might be hearing from Lily in the next few minutes as we discuss FC Tokyo's 1-0 victory at the Noivu Stadium away over Kobe on the Saturday night with the ex-Tokyo striker Yoshinori Muto watching on from the stands. His former club left with all 3 points thanks to a late Leandro winner. I don't know, Sam, it was, again, it's not always an easy watch when you were, when, you know, FC Tokyo are involved. It was, I guess it was a game of half chances. Hiroki Ikura didn't really have to make too many saves, did he? And Go Hatano was the busier of the two keepers. Luckily for him, Hotaro Yamaguchi's volley from just outside the D arced away from the keeper, but also flashed just past his right-hand post with 20 minutes left. And I don't know, it kind of looked like it was heading for a 0-0 draw, only for a moment of Leandro magic to win it for Tokyo in the 83rd minute. An absolutely stunning goal from the mercurial Brazilian.
Yeah, it was a tremendous goal, and it was a really good build-up that had been threatened by both sides, I'd say, on occasion, with little neat 1-2s in and around the area, but this one was, yeah, took to perfection. Great ball back to Leandro from Nagai, perfectly placed in front of him, and, yeah, unstoppable shot into the top corner, and it's kind of just what Leandro can do. And, yeah, this was a very weird game, because I thought, definitely watching it live, not a lot was happening, but then I went back and watched the highlights this morning and thought, oh, this was an incredible game. Where did this happen? But yeah, it was kind of half chances. Neither goalkeeper was really tested, as you said. And I think Vissel really missed Yoshinori Muto, especially in midweek. It was his ability to go beyond the defence, to stretch them, that was leaving more space for Osako and Iniesta to work in. And they didn't really have that without him there. And it was kind of all played in very tight areas. And Tokyo were kind of, yeah, fairly comfortable in allowing them to do that, because they didn't really stretch them anywhere. And it was sort of similar at the other end for Tokyo. Dalton will try and go the other way, but otherwise it was very compact as well, and it was just like tight little bits of football. Occasionally it looked very nice and came off, as it did for Leandro, but yeah, there was a little bit lacking, I thought, for both teams going forward, and it was a tight game, but Tokyo had that moment of quality. So yeah, fair play to them. It's a good victory, and I won't speculate any further on FC Tokyo for fear of any jinxing.
much appreciated. Yeah, it was a curious decision from, I presume, from Atsuhiro Miura to leave Muto out of the matchday squad. I don't know if he was injured or not, so apologies if he was. But to not have him on the bench if he was fit, and as a even an option after he'd played a couple of games in a row, obviously, was a head scratcher. I don't know, maybe he just didn't fancy taking FC Tokyo on. He didn't know how he was going to be able to handle it. But what about Yuya Osako then, Sam? He started the last two games, obviously, after coming in during the summer transfer window. His opportunities were very limited here, but we know he's very effective in link-up play as well. He's not necessarily a prolific scorer, but, a very good all-round forward. So how do you think he's settled in to the Kobe system in the last couple of games? Of course, it is a very small sample size.
Yeah, I think there are positive signs. I think the link-up in midweek with Muto was pretty decent. It caused a penalty on the stroke of half-time with the ball through to Muto. And there are signs that it will work with Iniesta, of course. But, I mean, he's come in. He's had a bit of a truncated pre-season. They did pick up an injury just before he left to come over to Kobe. So, and then, obviously, with the quarantine. So I don't think he's quite match fitness at the moment and quite as sharp as he could be, but yeah, there are definite signs that once they get all their pieces together, then yeah, they could be creating a lot of good chances. And then there were periods against Oita in midweek where they looked really dangerous, and it just wasn't quite the case here, and maybe a few things are a little bit off. But I think yeah, after the international break, if he gets a few more games for Japan over that period, and then yeah, I think we'll see the best of Osako and Muto going forward after that period.
Yeah, as we've said, it does shape as a terrific partnership going forward for Kobe for the remainder of the season. From a Tokyo perspective then, obviously a brilliant goal from Leandro. As we've said, he's capable of the sensational Leandro. And despite the very close attentions of Thomas Vermaelen, and with no backlift, Leandro's rifled a first-time shot into Hiroki Ikura's top corner, an absolutely brilliant goal. And, well, just as importantly for me as a Tokyo supporter, Sam, after taking the lead, they stifled any hopes of a Kobe comeback, didn't they? I mean, Vissel are famed for late drama, obviously, at both both ends of the pitch in their games. But, yeah, they did not have a shot on target after falling behind. And Joan Omari, is, I don't know whether he's established himself in the first team in the past couple of games. Obviously, Kenta Hasegawa has rotated his centre-backs in the past three or four games, which is something that we're not associated usually associate with him. But, yeah, this time it was Morishige and Omari. And I guess, yeah, I don't want to underplay the role they played in this game because they were excellent. And, yeah, Kobe never really had a sniff, as I said, after Tokyo took the lead.
No, they didn't. Yeah, he has come in and he's done well in both areas. Yeah, he's caused a threat going forward and obviously quite solid at the back. Tsuyoshi Watanabe is just... I don't think he's really kicked on as much as I thought he would do. I thought him and Morishige would be like a really established partnership, but he's not really done it in maybe the last few weeks. He gets caught out a little bit positioning-wise, and Umari is... I don't think he's necessarily the world's greatest defender, but what he does for well. He's yeah, his positioning in this game was very good, and he was always there to meet any balls into the area. He was there to be on the top of Osaka when he was receiving the balls into him. So yeah, I thought he played very well, and at the moment it's his position to lose, and unless Bruno Avini appears from somewhere, but I don't know where he is still. But you can't take anything away from Umari. I thought, yeah, him and Morishige were very solid in this game, and that's really what Tokyo need, because obviously Hasegawa wants to play a slightly more defensive system, but you can't really do that if your defence is a little bit all over the place. So yeah, it was very solid. It was a good sign for Tokyo, and hopefully for them, they can continue that going forward.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, Sam, I walked into a convenience store today and I saw a picture of Uvini on the side of a milk carton. So, yeah, he's missing in action. Nobody knows where he is. But, yeah, Bruno, if you're out there, mate, yeah, we can't wait to see you in action. It just appears that the manager doesn't share those same opinions. But anyway, for Tokyo, it was an important away win. For Kobe, a frustrating defeat as they could have... establish themselves in third in the table. But yeah, as Sam said, with so many teams locked together now on 47 points, a long way to go in the race for the ACL places, of course. And as we've mentioned, Tosu are very much in that hunt, and they remained so after Sunday's 1-0 away win over Sendai, for whom Takumi Masai somehow volleyed over from 2 yards out in the 22nd minute. And well, that was almost as good as it got for Sendai for the remainder of the 90 minutes, with the Tosu's winner in a game they had the better chances in coming courtesy of a terrific 25-yard free kick from Brazilian defender Eduardo in the 66th minute. Sam, that must have warmed the cockles of your heart.
Oh, absolutely. What a joy to see. A fantastic strike from Eduardo. No chance even for Jakub Slovic. Got nowhere near it. It was, yeah, a terrific effort. It was a bit of quality that was really kind of lacking in this game. The miss from Massey is dreadful. Sendai, as an attacking force, were pretty non-existent. Like, Tegurumori decides that they're down in the bottom. They don't score many goals, but Felipe Cardoso cannot get a start, even though I think he's their best striker. He's dropped Nishimura as well for the last two games, and yeah, he just played for CSKA Moscow. He can't be that bad. Why don't you give him a go? And you're playing Togashi and Akasaki, which is the most toothless centre-forward pairing I think I can imagine. So, yeah, they offered very little. Tosu weren't at their best, but, I mean, they were without Higuchi, who's... but he's been incredible for them this season. And then his replacement in the holding role was Koizumi, and he got injured pretty early on. So it wasn't really a vintage Sagan Tosu team, but they kept going on and had that moment of quality to win the game. So it was great for them to bounce back from their 4-0 defeat, which is a little harsh on them, I thought, in midweek. And yeah, they're still fighting for these ACL places. And yeah, full credit to them, given everything that's gone on at Tosu this season.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, for Sendai, yeah, it's obviously going to be a long last few months of the season as they scrap for their J1 survival. They're well and truly down in the relegation zone at the moment. They're currently 7 points from safety after, yes, a third straight defeat. Has continued their long winless run. Next, we'll head to the Toyota Stadium, and also on Sunday, Nagoya hosted Shimizu. Grampus had the better of the first half chances, and Shuichi Gonda had to deal with the fierce first time strikes from Yutaka Yoshida just before the break, and then Mateus shortly after the restart. Shimizu striker Tiago Santana stroked home a shot in the 56th minute, but the flag correctly went up for offside, and a minute later Nagoya took the lead when Kazuki Nagasawa played the ball forward to Naoki Maeda, who took a touch before rifling a shot past Gonda from the edge of the D. Another player capable of the spectacular Maeda, and this was a perfect example of that, a tremendous strike. Mateus shot wide shortly after as the Grampus looked to build on their lead, but Tiago Santana hooked a volley from Noriaki Fujimoto's cross just inside Mitch Langerak's right-hand post in the 74th minute to draw S-Pulse level. There was obviously no suggestion of offside on this particular occasion. A terrific goal from Tiago Santana, and that was enough to earn S-Pulse an important point for them, but yet more frustration for Nagoya, Sam. Obviously, they'd come in on the back of three straight wins, but overall, since the restart after the Olympic break, their performances have been lacking, and another frustrating result. They themselves could have taken sole possession of third place in the table at the end of the match day, but another home game ends in frustration for them.
Yeah, this will be as frustrating as it gets, because I thought Nagoya were in complete control for most of the game. They had a lot of possession around the area. But I think it's been a problem, as we've mentioned so many times, that they have a lot of the ball, but they don't have that central focus to play the ball in, who will then take a shot on. Because Fairshock played very well in midweek, but he was missing for this game. I think he took a little bit of a knock and they didn't want to risk him. But yeah, they got Kakitani up there and it's just not quite the same. I mean, he played a good ball in for Mateus, but in terms of an out-and-out goal scorer, they were really lacking that, and they needed someone to step up. But thankfully, in the end, Maeda did with a very good strike. But yeah, they just couldn't turn that possession into many clear-cut chances and any goals. And Gonda, in fairness, played very well. And then at the other end, Shimizu kind of showed what Nakua were missing, because they had one real half chance. It was for Thiago Santana, and he hooks in a wonderful goal that Langrat could do nothing about. And yeah, they've snatched a very crucial point for them. It gets them a little bit further away from Tokushima. It's only a point, but it could be could prove all the difference at the end of the season. So, yeah, good for Shimizu, but Nagoya will be fuming that they haven't won that game.
Yes, indeed. All right, Graham Fritchie's back in with a question on one of his clubs, of course, Nagoya Grampus. And again, Ryoya Morishita is in the firing line, or rather, Massimo Figadenti, the coach, obviously, is in the firing line. Now, Graham Fritchie says that Morishita made his third straight start as the left winger. It's not that he plays horribly, but obviously he plays the position defensive orientated, and he doesn't pose any offensive threat whatsoever, which is the opposite of what that position should do in the game. How can anyone justify that a defender who rarely gets to play at all and does most of his minutes as a substitute now starts out of his position instead of players like Abe, Soma and Maeda? These players probably don't understand either.
Okay, I hate to be, every week I seem to have become Mr. Ficadenti's defence attorney, but I'm going to back him again here. Last three games, Saito and Soma, who were the first choice at left wing, one of them, I mean, well, they both missed out. It came coincidentally with a COVID outbreak, and well, one player got it, so I'm not sure who the other is, and the other one will be injured, otherwise he'd be in the squad, because they're both always there. So those would be the first choice. So he's gone with Morishita, because Morishita, I've read an interview with him last week where he said, oh, I played wing at school, I played at university, I'm pretty happy there. And the way that Ficadenti plays, yeah, you might not like it, but his winger has to defend, and Sommer you see all the time running back and defending, so you're going to play Morrister there rather than Abe or Maida, who are kind of better in the kind of number 10 role they like to play going forward. They're not quite concerned with going back, so the best option, I think, for Fikadenti is Morrister, who, yeah, he's not that great going forward compared to Sommer is or Saito, but I think it's just done out of necessity. And Morrister has done his best. He's tried hard. I don't think he offers too much going forward, and I can understand the frustration with that, but I think it is extenuating circumstances, and once those two have recovered, I'm pretty sure... Well, Sommer came off the bench in the end in this game, so I'd say maybe for the Levain Cup or the next league game, I'd be expecting Sommer to take his place back in that position.
All right, Dan, and I'm certainly not mentioning Mu Kanazaki on this week's episode. I'm staying well and truly out of Graham Freche's firing line. We should also add that, Nagoya will be in Asian Champions League action as well after the international break. They got the short straw. No, hang on. You pulled the short straw, or you... anyway, you know what I mean, listeners. They got the rub of the green. There you go. That's what I meant to say. They were drawn at home against Daegu of South Korea in their ACL round of 16, one-legged clash. It's the same evening as Kawasaki visit Ulsan. So, we wish both of those teams all the best. And in case I forget to mention it later on, the Cerezo Osaka in action the next night. They're also at home against South Korean opposition in the form of Pohang Steelers. All right, well, we'll move on to the other draw from the match day 27 slate. And, Sam, we mentioned it on last week's episode that it was one of the games to watch out for. You never know what you're going to get when the Shonan play Urawa. But unfortunately, on this occasion, we got a damp, and it was literally damp because it poured rain in Hiratsuka on Sunday night. We got one of the dampest squibs you're ever going to see on a football pitch.
Yeah, this was horrendous. It was a terrible game, and I fear for the segment now because it's 2-0s we've had in the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, this was nothing to write home about. I mean, there was, I think, one good chance in the first half for Okubo when Junker played him in and he leant back and fired over, but really neither side really created too much. I think Reds had a bit more possession than they've been used to in the last few games, which is obviously what Ricardo Rodriguez wants, but it didn't really translate into many clear-cut chances. And yeah, this game surprisingly passed by without any incident whatsoever.
Well, that's it. I mean, it promised so much. And I mean, I don't want to pick at the scab or anything by mentioning all of the talking points that we were hoping we would be able to discuss about this game. But I mean, going back to right at the start of the episode, Sam, I asked you whether you thought Shonan had struck lightning in a bottle the previous Wednesday. And it appeared they absolutely had because, what did they do for an encore after a 5-1 away win? Well, they returned home and... while obviously Urawa were more obdurate opposition than Cerezo were on Wednesday night, yes, they were unable to find a way past Shusaku Nishikawa, or really to even test him at all over the course of the 90 minutes. And yeah, Kasper Junker, who'd scored in midweek to break his goal drought, the winner over Hiroshima, added to his tally. Could he build on his tally here? Well, no, he couldn't. And even with the Robin to his Batman, Yoshio Koizumi, back in the starting lineup for the first time since the league resumed post-Olympics, there were no goals for Junker and no goals on display at all for the very wet punters at the Lemon Gas Stadium. So, unfortunately, for a game that promised so much, we really don't have any more to talk about. Plenty of talking points elsewhere in the top flight. And next, we'll head towards the foot of the table. Obviously, Shonan are very much involved in the relegation dogfight. Two of the other combatants are Kashiwa Reysol and Yokohama FC. But I don't know, Sam, Kashiwa are edging their way. They've got some breathing room at least at the moment from the relegation zone. After this particular game, they now are 7 points clear of 17th placed Tokushima after their second straight win, 2-1 over Yokohama FC. And, well, we can obviously talk about the major incidents that led up to the winner, but the strike from Cristiano to win it was a goal of the season contender and an absolute, phenomenal strike from a very iconic player.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just kind of what you imagine a Cristiano goal to look like. Just absolute raw power into the top corner. And yeah, poor goalkeeper Brodersen, who has been very good since coming in for Yokohama, had no chance with that. And yeah, it was a terrific effort from a really good player. He's one of my favourites that I've seen in the J-League. And yeah, I was quite happy for him to get his goal after, he missed a penalty really quite poorly earlier in the game. But yeah, it was a decent win this for Kashua. They weren't great in midweek, but scraped through against Tokushima, another relegation candidate. And this was just another one where the result kind of mattered a bit more than the performance, because they played okay, but they didn't really take the game away from Yokohama at any point, who kept themselves in it and did well to keep themselves in it. But yeah, at the end, it was just that wonderful piece of quality from Cristiano that was the difference. And I think that is kind of the difference between Kashua and the teams down at the bottom. Kashua have a few players of Cristiano's quality that are going to win them tight games, and I think that'll be enough to keep them relatively safe in the end from relegation.
Yeah, terrific stuff. A great man once said that Cristiano is box office, and that was the perfect embodiment of it on Sunday night. An absolutely terrific strike. As you say, Sam, after he had missed a penalty 5 minutes before half-time, that was at 1-1 in the game after, both teams had scored inside the first 35 minutes. Sachiro Toshima's shot hit teammate Yusuke Sagawa on its way in the 29th minute as Reysol took the lead, but then Yokohama FC hit straight back when Kazuma Watanabe headed in a free kick from deep, almost the halfway line. A long ball forward and a terrific header from the veteran striker flashed in past Kim Sung-gyu, and this game will solely be remembered for that phenomenal goal from Cristiano. But unfortunately for Yokohama FC, they lost their captain Tatsuki Seko to a straight red card after he clattered Angelotti near the sideline in the 96th minute. So pretty unnecessary challenge at a time when the game was pretty much gone for Yokohama FC. So obviously that will see Seko suspended. Just before we leave this game though, Sam, obviously as we've said, two wins in a week for Kashua has their situation looking much brighter. We mentioned right back at the top that Yokohama FC moved off the foot of the table on Wednesday night. They obviously still have a lot of work to do to dig themselves out of trouble and to safety, 8 points behind 16th placed Shimizu. But I don't know, has this past week offered you any cause for optimism that they, Mission Impossible might be on for Yokohama FC, considering overall the state of things at the bottom? The teams around them are pretty ordinary when you go as far up as Shonan. So they're still in there fighting, and the fact that they've got themselves off out of 20th position when they were in there for basically the entire season so far, I don't know, do you give them any chance at all?
I give them a chance. I don't think it's much of a chance, but they have got a chance. The signings that they've made, especially Brodersen and Gabriel, who've played the most, they really have solidified that back line, so it keeps them in games for longer, and then they might get a little bit lucky. They've got Matsuo up front, and they've got a couple of other Brazilians that haven't really, again, got going yet. Felipe Vizeu did score a very good goal in midweek, but he's not like ready to start many games by the looks of it. But yeah, Brodersen and Gabriel are very solid. So far this season, they'd cycled through so many goalkeepers. They didn't really know which way to go, and they're all making mistakes. And the same at the back. I mean, we chastised poor Hakamada for a lot of the season, but yeah, he was making mistakes. And at the moment, they look a little bit more solidified there, and teams have to work a little bit harder to create goals against them now. So it gives them a chance. I'd like to see maybe Felipe Vizeu get fit and Salah Mineiro as well. And if those can all start at the same time, then maybe they can go on and win games. But it's going to be very difficult for them. I probably think they've left themselves too much to do. But yeah, they've given themselves as good a chance as possible.
All right then. So the team that replaced Yokohama FC in the cellar after Wednesday night were Oita Trinita, and on Saturday they travelled to Hiroshima, and they remained at the foot of the table after taking a 4-1 beating, but they did take the lead inside the first 10 minutes, Sam, after Ezekiel fouled Hokuto Shimoda, with one of our favourites, Naoki Nomura, sending Keisuke Osako the wrong way from the spot. But from there, it was very much one-way traffic, wasn't it, as Hiroshima ultimately enjoyed a day out.
Yeah, they did. And it's another game, really. We've seen a lot of them in the last month where Oita start pretty well and they compete, and sometimes they go ahead and they look like they're up for a fight, and then something happens, they concede a goal, or they go behind and then heads completely drop and they just don't really perform for the rest of the game. And this was kind of what it was here. Once Hiroshima went 2-1 up, I mean, there was no way back for Oita. They didn't believe that they could get back, and they kind of stopped running a little bit, which is a little bit of a shame, really. You'd expect Oita to fight consistently, but they didn't in this one. And Hiroshima played very well second half. They scored some very good goals. I mean, Junior Santos's swept effort into the top corner to end the scoring is probably one rivaling Cristiano for goal of the round. It was a terrific effort from him. And yeah, Hiroshima took full advantage of a pretty poor Oita side in that second half. And it's a needed victory for Hiroshima, who kind of wobbled a bit after Kaobe left, and they were kind of meandering towards a potential relegation fight. But yeah, this is a good win for them. It keeps them in a solid mid-table position. But yeah, it's tough to really see how Oita are getting out of it. There's just not enough goals in the team.
Indeed. And Graham Frecce's question on this game is very simple. Was it Hiroshima's best game of the season, do you think, Sam?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think, in terms of the best game, I think it was the 3-3 with Yokohama, which was madness at the start of the season. And they'd probably say that their performances against Kawasaki, especially the first of the 2-1-all draws, where they played very well. So maybe that was a slightly better performance. But in terms of just being clinical, in terms of scoring goals and putting a game to bed, then this definitely is. Because there's not a lot of competition for Hiroshima. But yeah, the way they played second half and the way Junior Santos played when he came on, I think that's his best performance, and probably is Hiroshima's as well.
Yeah, fair enough. So a first win in six for San Frecce, as you say, steadies their ship, Sam. And on the flip side, Oita are now six without a win, and as we've said, they have slipped to the foot of the table. We'll hope for better for Oita after the international break, but the way things are going, it does look like it's going to be a lengthy last couple of months of the season for them. Also, Tokushima, they're struggling after a fourth straight defeat on Sunday away at Fukuoka. A short trip for the Shikoku side over to Kyushu. But for Fukuoka, a key 3-0 win for them that took them above Sapporo and up to ninth in the table. Unfortunately, though, for Avispa, they lost their key creator, Emil Salomonsen, to a shoulder injury in the 12th minute. While the other major incident of the first half, This week in VAR, was a red card for Tokushima assistant coach Marcel for crimes against pet bottles shortly before half-time. We were debating whether or not we would break out the jingle for this incident or not, Sam, but obviously when the referee is summoned over to the monitor to check on somebody kicking a pet bottle, World War III is about to break out.
Oh, it's so stupid. I mean, what is the point of wasting everybody's time to deal with the assistant? Just get a word to the referee that he's either kicked the bottle or he hasn't. That's the decision that has to be made. It doesn't have to be reviewed. And someone's seen it. Just tell the referee to send him off and move on. We don't need the referee to look at various different angles of where he's kicked the bottle to make a decision. It just seemed a complete waste of time and a real farce. I don't think this is really what VAR was introduced for. So just move on and deal with it another way.
This week in VAR. Yeah, terrific stuff. But I mean, it did appear, Sam, that was the key incident of the first half when not a lot happened otherwise.
Yeah, it did seem that way. I mean, Salomon Son's injury there is a real blow for them, hopefully. Yeah, with the shoulder injury, you never really know how long it keeps you out. Some people could just kind of pop it back in and everything's fine. Otherwise, it can take a few months, so we'll wait to see any diagnosis on that. And hopefully for Avispa and for himself, obviously, Salomon Son, that he gets a swift recovery, because he has been terrific all season. He's a vital part to the way Avispa played. But yeah, the rest of that first half was fairly non-existent. Avispa didn't create too much. Takashima, likewise, as I usually am, I was annoyed with Dana Poyatos's team selection, with Kakita, Miyashiro and Nishia all dropped. They're probably the three most creative players besides Watai, but yeah, they're all on the bench. I'm not a massive fan of playing central midfielders out wide. I'm not a huge fan, really, of Kazunari Ichimi up front either. So they looked pretty toothless and didn't really threaten for that first half. And in the end, Avispa took control of the game in the second half. They were obviously full of confidence after their midweek win, and they scored three very, very good goals.
Yes, most definitely. It was Takeshi Kanemori who volleyed home a terrific opener from inside the D in the 53rd minute. And then John Mary, who obviously had seen what Hiroshima striker Junior Santos had done on a Saturday night, come off the bench to net a late brace. Well, John Mary said, "Hold my beer," to Junior Santos, as he basically repeated the dose. He came on in the 80th minute and then scored in the 87th and the 96th minute, John Mary, as I said, as Fukuoka moved above Sapporo and up to ninth. So, terrific result for the hosts, for Tokushima. As we've said, they have a long road to hoe in the last few months of the season, but they are still obviously well and truly in with a fighting chance, as there is quite a deal of muck around the bottom of the table. And Tokushima currently in the relegation zone in 17th, but they'll look to bounce back once the league resumes after the international break. And that leaves us with just one game left to review. And Sam, you mentioned it in last week's episode. In a normal year, the Osaka Derby, with Gunma Osaka hosting Cerezo, would be one of the first games on our running sheet. But on this occasion, it was 12th versus 13th. And it's ended with, Cerezo obviously saving face after that horrendous performance in midweek that we should have mentioned, I should have mentioned at the start of the episode, cost Levera Kulpi his job. Akio Kogiku was in the dugout managing Cerezo for this game, and he made a winning start as Cerezo triumphed 1-0 over Gunma, thanks to Riku Matsuda's goal shortly after half-time.
Yeah, Cerezo cheekily playing the new manager bounce for this derby, and it got them over the line in what was a pretty dull derby, really. It wasn't not a lot happening for either team. They had a couple of half chances. Taggart hitting the post in the first half for Cerezo, and they probably did edge it. I mean, Gunma, again, just didn't really click. They keep having to change their team, obviously, with all the fixtures that they're playing, but they haven't really found any sort of thing going forward that works very consistently. They tried Thiago Alves and Leandro Pereira up front in this one, and they had a couple of half chances each, but really didn't seem that threatening. And Cerezo, they had a couple of players missing. Thiago Pagnussat at the back, who I thought had played pretty well, but he was out, and Okuno was out as well. So they're pretty big players that are missing. And Kiyotake went off in the right at the start of the first half as well, so hopefully it's not another injury for him. But yeah, in terms of what was happening on the pitch, I mean, very little, to be honest. It was a poor game between two teams that are there in mid-table. They're not really pulling up many trees, and it was just a case of are one of these going to drop into that relegation battle. Gunma is 7 points clear at the moment, which probably should be enough for them, but neither team are really playing very well, and they're quite tough teams to watch at the moment.
Yes, indeed. Well, Cerezo have at least saved face after Wednesday, but pretty dirty week for Gunma Osaka, losing away at Yokohama FC on Wednesday, and then of course the derby on Saturday night. So, a rough week for Gumba supporters. Interesting to me, Sam, that Hiroto Yamami was introduced to the fray by Mr. Matsunami before more fabled teammates Takashi Usami and Patrick. Is that an indication of how poorly the latter two are travelling, or is it rather the impact that the youngster Yamami has made since he's joined the club?
Well, Yamami's certainly made an impact. He's not able to play every game because of those university commitments, that he can play like in Osaka, I think. But he's looked very good whenever he's played. But Patrick's just back from injury. It's probably played into him. But Osami has just not really created or done a lot, to be honest. You expect, I think, a lot more from a player of his pedigree. Obviously played in Europe, played Japan national team, and you'd be looking to him to kind of drag Gamba out of their situation. But yeah, he's maybe been a touch unlucky on occasion, but yeah, I don't think he's really done enough. And I know, say, pretty similar, he could have come on earlier, he's more established and should be offering a lot more. And that's kind of the story of this Gamba team. There are good players in there, but they're not playing anywhere near as well as they should be. And he's going to keep them in the lower reaches of the table. And it's absolutely not where this team should be. And they've got a real tough time to kind of salvage anything out of this season. Obviously, they're not going to do anything in the league except for probably survive, which is an absolute minimum expectation for a Gamba Osaka team. But yeah, they've got to try and pull something out in the Emperor's Cup or in the Levain Cup to really save this season. They go again against Cerezo in the Levain Cup with a two-legged Osaka derby as well. So yeah, I think those are big games for both teams, really, just to salvage what has been very poor seasons.
Yes, indeed. So they are all the games from match day 27 rounded up. Terrific round of fixtures from the weekend. And obviously now the league pauses. We do have Levain Cup commitments for a number of teams for the international break, with the Japan national team in action over the course of that. Of course, in the final round of AFC World Cup qualifiers, Japan kick things off against Oman at Gumba Osaka's Suita City Stadium on the 2nd of September, and then they travel to Doha in Qatar to face China on the 7th of September. So, Sam, any reaction to the squad announcement from Hajime Moriyasu last week? Any surprises for you, or was the names are pretty much as you expected?
Yeah, pretty much as expected. I don't think he's going to pull any rabbits out of hats at the moment. Maybe I'd have thought that maybe Al Tanaka could have made the squad after his performances for the Olympic team, but I think he's allowed to settle in at Dusseldorf, and the rest of the team looks pretty much as you'd expect. I'd be interested to see who he goes with up front, because obviously Furuhashi in that role has been fantastic since moving to Celtic, and obviously at Kobe. And then with Osaka not quite up to speed, you might think, well, maybe it's time for Furuhashi. It's certainly a more dynamic option going forward, but you'd expect maybe Osaka to keep it and Moriyasu to kind of play in that more restricted way. You've got to get off to a good start. You've got the two fairly... You've got Oman, you've got to beat at home. And China, you take advantage of it being in a neutral venue. You don't have the Chinese faithful there. And you've got to get... I think they need to get away with 6 points after these first two games. And, yeah, I expect them to do so, but I really want to see a little bit more of an attacking Japan side rather than what we saw with the under-23s at the end of that Olympics period.
All right, well, it should be two fascinating games to kick off, as we said, the final round of AFC World Cup qualifiers, and we'll touch on them in next week's episode as we get set for the run-in in J1, Sam. It's obviously going to be absolutely terrific, the last 10, 11 games or so in the top flight. For now, I guess we'll leave it there, and we'll be back to round up all the goings-on next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. We have got one sneaky J1 game, I think, next Sunday. It's the rearranged Vissel Kobe-Sanfrecce Hiroshima game. So, it could be pretty interesting if Hiroshima obviously off the back of a very good victory, and Kobe looking to take advantage of that game in hand and establish themselves in third. So yeah, that'll be interesting, and hopefully, yeah, Japan can see their games off, and we have some positive things to talk about there.
Indeed. Well, good spot. I'd missed that, the rearrangement of the Hiroshima Kobe game. So thank you. That's definitely something that we can add to the running order for next week's podcast. But for now, we will leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Neil Debnam for his time this week, and we'd also very much like to thank Graham Frecce for his always thought-provoking questions. And, thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. We'll be back next week to round up all the goings-on in the Japanese game. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.